I think it's always important to give equal credit to both partners in a marriage. Daddy and mother built that house. So, you know, I don't think it could have been done without her input, without her taking care of us little urchins, without her taking care of him, without her feeding him. And so let's be perfectly clear that yes, Daddy was an inventive person and he had his own mind about designing things, but they both built the house.
Hello and welcome to A Pixie from Kilmarnock, a program about the people, places, and the history of the Northern Neck of Virginia. I'm your host, Pixie E. Curry. Equal partners is a requirement in the venture to raise a family that is directed to achieve greatness. Husbands and wives sharing responsibilities to ensure their children and the extended families will share in the good and the bad, the sweet and the bitter, the anger and the happiness. I interviewed the family of Dr. Jan and Mrs. Elma Charity Charlton, the daughters, Janae Reed and Leigh Charlton, the nephews, Garrett Charity and Vernon Courtney, and the granddaughter, Jamel Lynn Charlton, by Zoom in April of 2021. Dr. Charlton was the first black doctor of Northumberland County, Virginia, and with his wife, Emma Charity Charlton of Charles City, Virginia, became a part of the Northern Neck, contributing to the region with their grace and charm and the continuing legacy of establishing the strong black family unit. This is part two of that interview.
So we had discussed doing a historic designation of the home where we grew up. You know, we're forming a nonprofit organization called the Jan B. and Emma Francis Medical and Legal Foundation. And the whole mission of that would be to aid people that aren't otherwise able to get training or educated in either med school or medical training or research projects or legal field. And so we thought that a part of what could happen with that would be the fact that Daddy was the first black physician in Northumberland. He had the clinic, the hospital, we call it the hospital, where he practiced in the basement of our home the whole time. And so that, we believe, will allow that particular property to get a historic designation. Huh. And so if we can get that, then we can start getting donations to preserve the property and restore the property, and maybe, and a lot of the equipment that Daddy had, the old x-ray machine, for instance, is still there.
Huh.
When you go in the basement, you still see the old alchemy bottles, the old medicine bottles that you know, where the pharmacist used to mix up stuff, and Lord knows what it was, but he did. most of ours was paregoric. So just trying to preserve a piece of history and the contributions that people have made, that, you know, they say unsung heroes, some of our unsung heroes, the people that are least appreciated are the people in your own family. Mm. And you know, I not to be critical of that, because, you know, maybe you get so accustomed to it, you don't realize the specialness of it. But when you've been around criminal defendants like I have, then you kind of get an inkling of the contributions that went into making us who we are, and God knows we're not perfect. There's some things that you just wouldn't expect us to do, and we wouldn't do. And that's because of our training and the contributions that our parents made to us and the family support that we have. You know, Harry's dad, you know, my mother's brother is his father. It's a set of values that were passed along to us that have eroded into where this country can now elect a Trump as president and have an insurrection but I digress. So yeah, so the idea is just to try to bring back some memory of the specialness of the people that made us and that have given us the drive and the will and the determination and the faith to get through some things. Drop the mic.
Janae, yes. One of the things that you was talking about, the legacy of families, is an eye-opener to know just some of the things that Black people did with the little that they had. For example, you were talking about your dad's house. I understood that that house is very special. Your father built that house, and when he built that house, he has specific features that he built that was sort of new for the area, particularly for a Black man to have in his house, like the way he was regulating the temperature in the house. Tell me something about that.
And, you know, I think it's always important to give equal credit to both partners in a marriage. Daddy and mother built that house. So, you know, I don't think it could have been done without her input, without her taking care of us little urchins, without her taking care of him, without her feeding him. And so let's be perfectly clear that yes, Daddy was an inventive person and he had his own mind about designing things, but they both built the house.
True.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, our father was very, very, you know, he was inclined to be an engineer. He prided himself on being an inventor. And our mother was a creative person. She prided herself on liking flowers and beautifying, you know, the environment around her and thus the environment around us. And so, you know, I mentioned the X-ray machine. So that was a first for that area, especially for a Black doctor. You know, to have an X-ray machine, I bet it looks like it was one of the first ones ever. It's so old, Pixie. But, you know, he had the rolling beds the ward room?
Yeah.
The ward room was a room every year or twice a year. Daddy would invite doctors from other areas in Virginia, other Black doctors from other areas in Virginia. And he would do they would do tonsillectomies and adenoid, so, you know, just ENT stuff. Wouldn't they, Garrett?
I had my tonsils taken out during one of those sessions. So, you know, I remember it well.
And so the doctors would come and then, you know, there would be lots of patients and
lots of ice cream. But Pixie, you were asking about the furnace and how he constructed the...
Not only the fact that Dr. Charlton was that he was a doctor, but also he was an inventor. My dad and lots of other people talked about your dad inventing this piece for the car.
Catalytic converter. Yeah.
Catalytic converter. Did you know about this?
I did. And so a few years ago, I did a search on, I have a friend who works for the Patent and Trade Office for USPTO. I looked up some of Big Daddy's inventions to see if they were patented. So I knew that he's had a few patents over the years for different mechanical elements. I was not aware of even though I grew up in the house on 360, until I was 7, I wasn't aware of the uniqueness in the temperature control that you were just talking about, but I did know that Big Daddy did have several patents and one related to the catalytic converter.
They always give ownership to someone else.
Yeah, because we think that those patents were stolen. At least one, there was one that I've done a little bit of research on, and that's the one that deals with coal conversion, where he has all of these elaborate drawings and all of this. And I found a company, that has the exact the same thing. And it just looks like it was just stolen.
Hmm. I've seen it, his information used and cited in some European articles.
The thing that really draws me to your family is how all of you are achievers. There's pieces of Dr. Charlton that each of you seem to embody, and you've taken it and you have gone and made it yourself.
Yeah, because because the story is about him. So, yeah, I understand how, you know, when you revert to talking about him, that, and then now projecting it to us, you're talking about that. But, you know, there's some strong sisters over here that are going to be talking about Emma, Charity, Charlton.
I want it all.
Okay.
I want it all. I do want to hear about Mrs. Charlton and Dr. Charlton, but I also want to hear about you all, to hear about how you grew up in this family, this strong unit. You all decided one way or another that you all was going to pursue a profession that is indicative to the parents, the main source, Mr. and Mrs. Charlton. But you had your own lives too.
Right, yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, you being younger, what was your first recollection of racism?
When we moved to Richmond, when I was in the second grade, they put me in a classroom with all Black students. The teacher was Black, and coming from Reedville, I had Layla, she was Black, and I had a white teacher. But coming to Richmond, I was put in a class with all Black students and a Black teacher, and I didn't recognize that I was Black. So I went home and I told Great, and I said, Great, I'm in a class with all Black people. And so, I mean, and I guess coming from, I don't know, what their expectations of me as a Black student coming from Reedville were, but quickly, I think I was academically advanced. Oh, did I break up? I am 24 miles from North Carolina now. So I was in a class with all Black students for a while, and then I moved to Mrs. Campbell's class that was academically advanced. It was just different. And so that was what I was more accustomed to. When we moved to Richmond, we moved to Northside, which is a Black neighborhood. But we moved on the edge of Washington Park and Ginner Park. And so we were on kind of a line that had mixture of Blacks and whites. But I was in a low educated, but the Black students weren't really challenged. Even in 78, they expected them not to succeed.
Right.
And so yeah. I was moved to a class where I was expected to achieve. And those students in that class went on to take advanced classes, and all of them went on to college. All the Black students in my class went on to college. And then when I moved to North Carolina, my journalism teacher, she said, oh, now I was the only Black person in class. She said she needed the Black perspective for the yearbook. And I was like, well, I could do that. And she said, oh, Amy, you're not really Black. And she said, oh, you're on top of your uncle's a lawyer. So that made me not Black. And I said, the color of my skin says other. So... And even though I love Miss Gray, she told me, she said, I'm not racist. I marched with Dr. King in the 60s. And I was like, but you are racist. I mean, if you're telling me that I can't be Black because Lay's a doctor and Bernard's a lawyer, that to me tells me that you don't think Black people can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even now, it's difficult for me to tell my children that racism doesn't still exist when they are overlooked, and they have to be 1,000% better than their white counterpart and still aren't chosen. So,
oh, wow, that was an ignorant teacher. Jeez, and she was
culturally, really culturally and ignorant. Yes,
that's yeah.
That's still going on, though. That's still going on today, though. That's still going on today.
Yeah. Amazing that that's still going on today, though.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
We faced it in Pittsburgh. My kids attended Catholic school, And in high school, they didn't allow the blacks in the advanced placement courses. They just assumed that they would not do well in advanced placement courses. Mm-hmm. And the honor courses. So we had to go. This is my oldest son when he started. So we had to go to the principal and says, look at his grades. I mean, look what he did in elementary school, in grade school, in elementary school. Why are you denying him the honor and advanced placement courses? They just assumed, you know, that the blacks couldn't excel in those courses. But he did get in, of course. And like Skitch, he went on to an Ivy League school. But, you know, parents got to fight for them. Parents right. got to get there and fight for them, you know. And now Eric didn't have any problem. He's 5 years later. He didn't have any problem because his brother did well. So he didn't have any problems. Yeah,
proceeded.
Proceeded him. And the ironic part about it, the kids that were taken, this is three stories to this high school. The kids that were taking the honor courses, they were on the third floor. Everybody else was lower. This Catholic school, it's brutal. Everyone else, the dummies were on the first floor. The average, the B students, the C students were on the second floor. The honor students were on the third floor. It's racism is still going on today. I mean, that's the way it is.
Well, it's just as crazy now as it ever was, because think about it for a minute. Damn building catches on fire. Who's going to be the best served? The folks on the ground floor. Get the hell out of here.
Best chance to get out of it, right?
Hi, guys. I got to run. My daughter is here. She's going back this evening to Detroit, and I need to hang out with her for a minute, but it's great to see everybody. Be well.
All right. Thanks for being here. Yeah.
Take care. Love you all.
Love you too.
Lee and Janie, I'm gonna let you guys, Pixie, talk to you guys about Uncle Jane, getting back to Uncle Jane, but I really enjoyed it, so I appreciate it, okay?
Oh, thank you, Garrett.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, and my pleasure, Pixie. And Jamil, I don't understand why you moved back to Charles City, but we'll talk about that another day, okay? Yeah, I know. You guys take care. See you later.
If you are not living on the Northern Neck, but you were, and what do you miss the most about not being on the Northern Neck right now?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Well, see, I get there often enough to breathe the air, so to speak, you know? I go to church, I visit Tank's grave, mother and daddy and his parents' graves, you know, not that that's embracing or enjoying the Northern Neck, but just the feeling that there's a certain part of my trip that I'm like, I'm home. And it feels like there's not a care in the world, you know, and it's I guess it's a spirit of it, but you know, it's not like I have to live there every day. You know, it's just those moments that I have. And it doesn't matter which route I do. Sometimes, you know, a few years ago, I would get to Warsaw and I would go so that the Norris Bridge, I would go over to get through Lancaster, then to get to Northumberland. It's just something about getting to a certain point that you're home. And, you know, I guess it's when life was easier. You know, you didn't have the things of adult living and all of that. It just takes me, it is the nostalgia of growing up and how easy, you know, it was then. So I guess it's just that, just the familiarity of, you know, a place that, you know, I grew up, I call home. And I mean, it's like a shot in the arm for me when I go home, you know, and it does, like I said, I don't have to live there every day. I don't have to go there every weekend, but just knowing that I have the opportunity, there's someplace I can go and lay my head and it's home.
What about you, Lynn? What?
Yeah, me, I miss just the kindness and the laid back environment. And so I haven't been to Reedville in a while. And so I went for Easter, and driving down through Ophelia, I was, when Grady and I would come from Richmond, we would take 360 out. And so there were so many things, so many landmarks. And I'd say, oh, there's the party house. Oh, there's James Newsom's house. Oh, there's. So having all of those memories and being there and having the fresh air and the bay and the Potomac River and all of that. When I graduated from college, I moved to Southern Maryland. And growing up, in Reedville, we would always look across the river and say, oh, well, that's Maryland. So when I moved to St. Mary's County, I said, oh, this is what I always saw growing up in Reedville. And so coming back home to my original home, it is seeing old folks, the old people that I knew, and just having all of those experiences and looking at Aunt Bessie's house, Uncle Bessie and Aunt Bessie and Uncle Bill's house, and going to Shiloh. And when I left Reedville a couple of weeks ago, I went by Shiloh and I was baptized by Reverend Morris in the river. And so all of those experiences, I think, helped form me to who I am today. Having the ability to go there and just see all of the stars and the undeveloped life, the simple life, like Lay said, it's great.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Danae?
So I'm there constantly. I've lived there for over a year now. And, you know, I was going back and forth to DC, but I have to tell you, it is just so peaceful. It's just a very special place. There's not a whole lot of interaction with people, you know, but when you do, it's usually pleasant. I remember the first, maybe the second or third day I got there, I went to a restaurant in Kilmarnock, a pizza place. And they brought out a pizza that I just couldn't eat it. And I got so mad. I responded as if I was in DC. And then I had to catch myself because they were so nice and they were trying to be nice. And I was just being, what kind of pizza is this?
She did our city girl. She reverted to her city girl mode.
But I had only been there a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And so I learned from that experience. I said, you know, you're not in DC. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to respond to people here the way you respond to people in DC. You don't have to, you know, you just don't have to be that assertive. You know, I'm not saying that everybody isn't perfect and everybody isn't nice. But there is a level of civility in the Northern Neck, in Ophelia, in Reedville, in Burgess, even with the white racism, you know, even with the fact that, you know, there are a lot of Trump supporters and a lot of very conservative white people there. Even with that, the confrontation kind of things that go on in cities, I just don't find there, you know. And people are helpful. You know, even the racist ones are helpful. You know, you need directions, they're gonna give you directions. You need if they turn your trash can over, they're gonna pick it up. You know, it's a different vibe. You know, I have a t-shirt that says, people are people. But it brings, you know, I think the sense of living on the water, living from the earth, farming and being out in the fresh air and eating good foods, even with the junk foods, you know, it's a different vibration there. It invites creativity. It invites slowing down.
I would really love for one day all of y'all get together and y'all come to my house.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, take care.
See you today. Right. See you
today. Bye-bye.
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 Nothing can ever take away the feeling of family love, the support system that you can rely on as you clear your own path, a path that someday another family member may follow, and the responsibilities of keeping the path clear of the weeds of complacency, rocks of selfishness, the holes of ignorance. These interviews have renewed my faith and deepened my pride as I listened to the many stories I was honored to share with you about the Northern Neck. The music by Robert A. Hall. This is dedicated to those I wished I had the chance to talk to but still feel as I have known them for all of my life. Thank you for listening.